Welcome to Fitness Circle. This is Ed Angelus. We're now on season 4, episode 51 of this podcast. And this time we'll be discussing another interesting topic about innovation. For today's podcast episode, we have invited Mr. Umang Mundra, Chief Executive Officer from Apex Platform, based from Singapore, as he walks us through the critical importance of innovation to our digital economy. So let's get started. Thank you for listening to FinCircle and welcome to our podcast. The economic volatility and uncertainty, higher costs of funding, and the need to diversify supply chains are particular concerns for businesses operating in the Asia-Pacific region. But what sets the region apart is the access to enormous technology talent pools that are adept at resolving problems through the use of artificial intelligence, process automation, data analysis, among others. One result of this is the region's leadership in adopting new real-time payments methods plus APIs and cloud-based payment technologies, which has led to the emergence of popular digital wallets and sophisticated digital banking providers. These in turn are transforming e-commerce and leading the swift rise of new business approaches, such as direct-to-consumer, usage-based pricing, and subscription models. Meanwhile, online platforms that once catered into a single niche are expanding through partnerships with firms in other sectors, giving rise to multi-industry and region-wide ecosystems. This has made the region a cradle of innovation when it comes to financial technologies or fintech, and a must-follow space for those interested in where digital adoption go next. Here are some significant developments in the region based on the recent research study conducted by and courtesy of JP Morgan. Number one, India's Unified Payment Interface, or UPI, which allows instant peer-to-peer and person-to-merchant payments via mobile devices, is fast expanding internationally through partnerships in several countries, including Singapore and the United Arab Emirates. The National Payments Corporation of India, or NPC, is also enabling UPI capabilities using phone numbers for accounts in India held by Indian residents residing overseas. Developed by the NPCI in 2016, UPI is a major reason that India leads the world in real-time payments. An estimated 8 billion RTP transactions happen every month. And the country's central bank also recently launched India's Central Bank of Digital Currency, the digital rupee. While it's still at the initial stages, a digital rupee on an interoperable blockchain can help facilitate real-time cross-border transactions without intermediaries and usher to an era of cheaper, more efficient currency management. Number two, with the expansion of the digital renminbi, or ECNY, pilot for retail users in 23 cities in 2022, China became the largest economy to offer a central bank digital currency at scale. Users are now able to access their ECNY and wallets on mobile apps. In parallel with the launch, the country's popular online platforms are now allowing for ECNY as a method of payment, supported by the country's existing retail payment infrastructure. The ECNY system will help bolster China's digital economy through a more secure form of currency, enhance financial inclusion, and also drive greater efficiency. ECNY has so far been used primarily for domestic retail payments, but there is potential for adoption across corporate and personal businesses in the near future. Number three, a major international financial center in Asia, Hong Kong, serves as an important gateway to mainland China and is the largest center for conducting offshore renminbi financing activities. As the renminbi, or RMB, grows in popularity as an international payment currency, there is increasing demand for both foreign multinationals and China-headquartered companies for CNH payment capabilities, such as flexible CNH fixed rate optimization. The city central bank is also committed to expanding RMB liquidity in the region through enhancement to the RMB liquidity facility, as well as introducing additional risk management products such as Swap Connect. Number four, Singapore continues to make strides when it comes to pioneering innovative ideas across the payment ecosystem. In 2016, for instance, the Monetary Authority of Singapore, or MAS, along with the industry players including JP Morgan, began experimenting with blockchain under the banner Project Ubin. Over 5 years, this explored how distributed ledger technology, or DLT, could be used in everything from decentralized netting of payments to the delivery versus payment, or DVP, settlement process commonly used for securities. The success of this work is paving the way for commercialization such as joint venture among DBS Bank, JP Morgan, Temasek, and Standard Chartered Bank, which plans to operate a blockchain-based multi-currency clearing and settlement platform called Patriot. Currently, the MAS continues to work on key initiatives to further enhance DLT usage, such as instant cross-border exchange and settlement of foreign currency transactions, as well as the programmable digital Singapore dollar. Presently, they work on decentralized finance applications, looks at how to tokenize government bonds, as well as Japanese yen and Singapore dollar deposits, can demonstrate new models of trading, clearing, and settlement. Number 5. Despite a plethora of digital payments, choices in addition to credit and debit cards, cash remains the dominant medium of exchange in Japan. That is likely to change as the authorities have introduced is what we call cashless vision, with an aim to increase cashless transactions to 40% by 2025. To help achieve its goal, the Japanese government is set to introduce a system that will allow companies to pay a portion of salaries into e-wallets on mobile devices by the spring of 2023, alleviating the need to withdraw cash from ATMs, and such convenience coupled with discounts offered by these new payment providers will likely help drive the shift towards a cashless society. The transition to cashless payment is also expected to help overseas workers receive salaries without needing to open a bank account, and further expand financial services information in the market and promote significant growth. Number 6. The digital payment landscape in Australia and New Zealand has also undergone significant changes in the recent years. The cash and checks have been largely replaced as major forms of payments, with digital alternatives such as e-wallets, real-time peer-to-peer transfers, as well as buy now, pay later services achieving mainstream adoption to everyone in the country. According to the Australian Treasury, almost half of the country's population today make contactless payments using mobile and wearable devices. Real-time payments launched in 2018 already account for a third of total peer-to-peer payments, and there are more than 5 million active BNPL users as of today. And the trend towards a more digitized payments ecosystem is only expected to grow, driven by the rise on e-commerce, as well as high mobile penetration and changing consumer behaviors that favor more instantaneous as well as convenient forms of payments. So there we are. This is truly a digital adoption on the rise. In today's podcast episode, we'll be talking to the Chief Executive Officer of Apex Platform, Mr. Umang Mundra, based in Singapore, as he shares with us his remarkable views on innovation and its significant relevance to our digital economy. It's an honor and privilege to have you, Umang, and welcome to FinCircle.
The honor and privilege, actually, Edgar, is all mine. And I do have a caveat before we begin. I don't do things like this very often. So if I don't do this right, technically or in any other manner, my apologies in advance to you and to your listeners.
Thanks so much, Umang, for joining us today. Let's probably start by defining on what is innovation and its value proposition to our digital economy.
That, Edgar, is actually a very tough question to answer, because I think it is best answered by academics who write about this and not simple industry practitioners like me. But since we're here, let me try and see if I can answer this. We have all seen different definitions of innovation as provided by authors, business leaders, regulators, innovators, etc. And all of them are appropriate. But to me, the definition of innovation that resonated most with me is something fairly simple. It's something that I read in a Harvard Business HBO publication quite some time back. And it says that innovation is a product, service, business model, or strategy that is both novel and useful. Fairly simple and straightforward. Basically, any product, service, business model, or strategy that is both novel and useful. To understand the value proposition of innovation in the digital economy, we probably also need to define what the digital economy is. It may mean different things to different people. And given the immense scale of the digital economy and everything that it encompasses, it's a very wide field. Each one's understanding and definition of what the digital economy is probably correct. To me, and again, this is not my definition, something that I have read, to me, the digital economy is the total of all economic activity that results from the billions or probably even trillions of everyday online connections among people, businesses, governments, their devices, and their data. So the sum total of all the economic activity that results from these interactions between all of these entities and hardware. And given today's hyper-connected world, one which all of us are a very integral part of and contribute to every single day, every single minute, we're contributing to it right now, you can just imagine how vast this is there for. And so innovation in the digital economy is basically, as we discussed earlier, any novel or useful product, service, business model, or strategy which leads to a better experience in the way people, businesses, our devices, and our data interact with each other. It's all about fostering change and progress. It's the process of introducing new ideas, new strategies, new technologies to both adapt and also to thrive. And from a business perspective, all of these are geared towards growth, increased customer loyalty, and greater operational efficiency. Ultimately, frankly, as we all know, innovation is the lifeblood of the digital economy. There is no other part of the economy that is so dependent on innovation on a constant basis. So innovation is the lifeblood of the digital economy, and it's what propels organizations, businesses, societies forward.
What is the most common misconception about innovation and its underlying challenges at this day and age?
This is something close to my heart. So I'm happy you asked this. To my mind, Edgar, there are two very common misconceptions. So first one, that innovation means disruption. And that's not incorrect, but people typically think innovation means disruption. And some great examples are what Apple did with the iPod or the iPhone, what Netflix did to entertainment, what Amazon did with shopping, or retailing, closer home, or the country that I come from, what UPI has done to payments in India. These are all disruptions. These are all innovations. And these innovations are all based on technologies. They disrupt business models and entire industries. They make products and services available in a completely different manner than before. They create completely new market segments. And that is certainly innovation. And that is the one that we are most familiar with, and the ones that seem most exciting, the ones that are most spoken about. However, to me, that is what we, you know, eulogize or talk about. But innovation is actually much more than that. It can also be non-disruptive. It can be what is called sustained innovation or sustaining innovation. That is where an existing product or a service is made better, probably in small, incremental, continuous manner. We speak about the iPhone, big disruption, right? When the iPhone was launched, it was a clear example of the disruptive innovation. But after that, every new model of the iPhone, and we started from wherever we started, and we now onto iPhone 14 or 15, it's an example of sustained innovation. So it is, to my mind, one of the misconceptions is that innovation is all about disruption. It is very often about disruption. That's what is most spoken about. But what happens on a daily basis is actually sustained innovation. And you cannot ignore sustained innovation and focus only on the disruption. So that's, to my mind, misconception number one. Misconception number two is that innovation is all about technology, or that is solely a technology endeavor. While technology is a very crucial enabler, to me, it is only that, an enabler. And that's the only role that technology plays. What innovation actually requires is something much more profound, and yet something a lot more prosaic. It is actually a change in the way organizations think of and create and deliver value to clients. It is a change in the silos, the organizational boundaries, in the ability and manner of taking and managing risk. It is a change in the way leaders lead and managers manage. It is a change in the way that organizations have actually functioned hitherto. It's a change in the mindset of the entire organization. And it is therefore a change in the most crucial element that defines an organization, and which is its culture. Often, leaders overlook this aspect of culture and focus on technology. And if you focus only on technology and not on the organizational culture, you can get the best technologists and the best technology, but you will either have failures or just mediocre results. So to me, those are the two misconceptions. One, that innovation is only about disruption. It's not. And number two, innovation is all about technology. It is not. Technology is an enabler. Innovation is all about culture, the culture of an organization.
That's a very good point, Umang. I understand that you started a leading edge and state-of-the-art fintech platform called Apex. Thus, what are your relevant takeaways from this remarkable initiative?
Edgar, a quick point of clarification here. Yes, I am the CEO of the company that owns and operates the Apex platform. Yes, I was involved with Apex in its very early formative period. And most certainly, yes, Apex is the leading edge, state-of-the-art fintech innovation platform. But it would be wrong to say that I started Apex. And let me provide the context. Apex was actually conceived of and launched by the Financial Services Regulator and Singapore Central Bank, MAS, or the Monetary Authority of Singapore, one of the most respected central banks and regulators across the world. So MAS, along with IFC, which is a part of the World Bank Group, started the Apex platform. Once the platform gained a certain size, scale, awareness, and a set of customers, both MAS and IFC decided to commercialize the platform by getting investors to come in, invest in the platform to provide the necessary capital for scale and for growth. So in October last year, in fact, exactly a year back today, Apex was taken over by Sinfindo, an entity owned and operated by two investors. The two investors are LemmaTree, which is a company owned by Temasek, and the second investor is MasterCard. So Apex thus has a great legacy with MAS and IFC as founders, and a great future ahead with investors like LemmaTree from Temasek and MasterCard. At Apex, our mission is to provide growth for financial institutions through innovation and through digitization. And that is exactly what Apex does, drive innovation through collaboration. Apex is a collaborative innovation platform that is purpose-built to transform and simplify the collaboration journey between financial institutions and fintechs. And I'll repeat that. It's a platform that's purpose-built to transform and simplify the collaboration journey between financial institutions and fintechs. What Apex does is it allows financial institutions to search for and discover innovative digital solutions from fintechs and then rapidly design, experiment with, test, and evaluate these solutions using API integration. FIs can run hackathons and innovation challenges completely end-to-end on our platform, tapping on our network of 2,000 fintechs and over 1,000 developers. The platform is designed to facilitate open banking and API integration. In leveraging Apex for innovation, FIs are able to not just find and test solutions from across the globe, FIs are actually able to cut down the innovation cycle by 75%. What is normally a 18 to 24 month process can be completed on Apex in just 3 to 6 months, with much more effective results. And this has been proven in case after case where we work with financial institutions. Today, as we all know, more than ever, time is money. And as a financial institution, by leveraging Apex, if you can save 12 to 18 months in solving your problems and getting to market faster, that is real and immediate impact to the bottom line. And that's what Apex is all about. Collaboration for innovation and digitization such that the whole process is accelerated.
Apex is one of the most innovative platforms we have in the market today. Hence, what are the main influences and motivation in building these innovative capabilities?
Very important point, Edgar. Fact is that today, the financial services industry very clearly understands the criticality of innovation and digitization. They know that these are imperatives to maintain customer loyalty, to retain market share, to improve margins, basically everything that is needed for growth. And fact also is that the industry is spending hundreds of billions of dollars on this every single year. Yes, hundreds of billions. But even then, even after spending all this time, effort, and money, success for most has been middling at best. Studies have shown that only about the sixth of the industry can be counted as digitally focused. And why is that? Even after spending all this time, effort, and money, why is only a sixth of the industry digitally focused and the rest is not? Why is that? And here I'm going to refer to my notes for a minute because I want to read quotes from two CXOs, CEOs actually, from two financial institutions. The first one says, "The time of banks building their own tech has long ended, except for the largest players. The size of the necessary investment, talent scarcity, and the need to scale make it difficult for a single bank to justify building tech capabilities on its own." So that's the first comment. The second one, which I think is even more telling, is there is no effective, trusted way for FIs to find, collaborate, and develop innovative solutions with fintechs. FIs are rightfully concerned about the enterprise-grade capacity, scalability, reliability, and tech risk compliance readiness of fintechs. A mouthful, but you can understand what that means. To me, these statements bring out the crux of the matter. I want to collaborate to innovate, but I don't know how. And that's where APEX comes in. APEX was set up exactly to solve this collaboration challenge. APEX is very unique in that it is the world's first cross-border open architecture API marketplace and sandbox platform for financial institutions of all types, banks, insurers, regulators, market infrastructure providers, non-bank financial institutions, you name it. It is for everyone. And APEX's capabilities, product capabilities, enable very rapid discovery, testing, and evaluation of innovation offerings. You can search for solution providers through APEX's marketplace. You can solve for your problems with APEX's hackathon capabilities. And you can build and test POCs in real time with APEX's sandbox. Between the marketplace and hackathon capabilities, what we have is, frankly, for lack of a better phrase, matchmaking on steroids for the financial service industry. Today, you can launch a global innovation challenge or a hackathon within hours and go live. And with our sandbox, FIs can do unlimited amount of testing in real time without having to bring the fintechs behind their firewall into their environment, because that is a process that takes at least 6 months and is fraught with risk. You can carry out all of this testing on a trusted, neutral third-party platform like APEX. So I will reiterate in closing that at APEX, our mission is to enable growth for financial institutions by accelerating innovation and digitization. We do this with our collaborative innovation platform that unlocks endless possibilities to craft stronger value propositions.
APEX credentials are quite impressive, Umang. Since it has served over 100 clients and presently being leveraged by over 1,300 notable fintech participants in the ecosystem, primarily driven by the APEX platform. Perhaps you can tell us more about it.
Thanks, Edgar. And again, we covered a lot of that in the answer to the previous question. But yes, what you mentioned about the ecosystem, that is what truly differentiates APEX and what makes it the leading innovation enabler. As of the end of 2022, as you mentioned in the question, we had about 1,300 fintechs. As of today, we have 2,000 fintechs from over 90 countries and approximately 50 different domains. You can easily imagine how powerful that is when you're looking for solutions and for solution providers. In terms of the FIs that have used our platform, we have country-specific and international regulators, banks, rural banks, insurance companies, market infrastructure providers, and even universities and colleges. We have helped them solve over 250 problem statements. They have used our sandbox more than 1,500 times for creating POCs. These FIs thus far, or these organizations thus far, have primarily been from South and Southeast Asia, but we now have clients in Europe, Middle East, and North America. We thus have global reach and create impact at scale. The ecosystem, the innovation ecosystem that APEX has painstakingly built is truly unparalleled.
From your perspective, Umang, what do you think are the leader attributes required in order to be more innovative?
Very interesting question, Edgar, and one that could be the subject of an entire book or books, and in fact has been. People far more knowledgeable with far more experience have written and spoken about it. And for me to say that I know the answer would be quite presumptuous. However, given that we are on the topic, I will just share my views and thoughts. These are based on what I've learned from some of the best people that I've had the good fortune of working with. And if I may say, some of the not so good too. I have learned immensely from them and from my own experiences. We don't have time to delve into each of these in detail, But to me, the most important leadership attribute to drive innovation is to build the right culture. And that is what we spoke about earlier, the misconceptions about innovation. Many people think of innovation as all about technology. Again, as I said, technology is just an enabler. The most important ingredient by far is having the right culture. And the difference that this can make is very evident and visible as we work with clients from across the world. And what are some of the successful elements of this culture? There are four things that I would specifically like to mention. First and foremost is empowerment. Easy word to say, but very difficult to implement. But fact is that empowerment breaks down the shackles of hierarchy. It recognizes talent, unleashes creativity. It breaks down the silos that fetters people against the organization moving ahead together. It makes the organization astonishingly nimble, allowing it to move at the speed of digital. It really awakens and energizes. So the first one is empowerment. The second element, in my view, is alignment. And this is alignment not just across functions, but across individuals. When leaders build this alignment, progress is unstoppable, inexorable. In a manner of speaking, it is when everyone is speaking not just the same language, but the same dialect, phrases, slang, and idioms, such that there is complete understanding in the entire organization. And therefore, the organization then moves forward as one united being. So you've empowered people, you have aligned people. The third element is acceptance of failure, accepting that failure leads to success. What leaders need to grasp is that the same rigor, discipline, and thought process that they bring to managing and mitigating risk, say credit risk, in the banking space where I come from, that same rigor and discipline can actually be applied to ideas, collaborations, and partnerships. Fully expect that some will simply not work. Begin with that premise. Set caps or floors on how much risk you're willing to take. And then, depending on the nature of the collaboration, these could be the financial or otherwise, depend on how define how much risk you will take, financial or otherwise. Watch the performance very closely, monitor results, calibrate, decide when to press on and move ahead, and decide when to stop. And the stopping is not a failure, but it is the essential path to success. So empower your teams, align your teams and people, and accept that they will be failures because that is an essential stepping stone to success, which you will ultimately get. The fourth element, and this is often the most overlooked, is to treat your employees as customers that go. Organizations, businesses spend a lot of effort in crafting the ideal customer journeys and upgrading them continuously. However, there is a complete, often a complete lack of concomitant focus on improving employee journeys. And the more the organization focuses on client journeys and improves them, the worse employee processes appear in comparison, leading to a lot of cynicism and disengagement on part of the employees. What I have seen is that organizations that focus on improving employee journeys, employee processes, not just to gain greater efficiencies and lower costs, but to actually bettering and enriching lives of their employees, find their employees then become a lot more proactive, become a lot more engaged, and in fact, actually become the strongest brand ambassadors and promoters. And therefore, I do believe that organizations have to treat employees as customers. So to me, the four most essential attributes as a leader is to empower your people, to get alignment, to treat employees as customers, and to think that failure is the essential stepping stone to success. as I said in the very beginning, this is a topic which on which we could just go on forever and forever, but I think enough said for now.
Very spot on. I understand that you're also an angel investor, Umang. Hence, what are you looking for the entrepreneurs that you invest in?
As a angel investor, there are two broad things to look at: the business model and the entrepreneur himself or herself. I guess your question focuses on the latter. What do I look for in an entrepreneur? And so I will talk about that. I think most angel investors will look at a couple of characteristics, if I may call it that. And I have actually created an acronym for that, which is a word, the first word that you look for, or the first quality that you look for. But the acronym that I've created for that is passionate, right? And what does passionate stand for? The P stands for passion, which is the very first thing, obvious. The A stands for the ability to delegate. You will never be able to do everything by yourself. And do you empower your people enough to be able to delegate to them? The S stands for support system. Being a founder is hard. It is very, very, very hard. And there are moments of extreme doubt. And do you have enough support system behind you to help you through these tough times? The second S stands for related to the first S, which is self-confidence. Because there will be such moments, do you have enough self-confidence in yourself and in your own ability? The I stands for probably the most important element, and that is integrity, right? Will you do the right thing? And there can be enough and more pressures to do the wrong thing and for do the wrong thing for reasons that seem right, but will you insist on doing the right thing? The O stands for, do you have an open mind, right? Open mind to new ideas, open mind to saying, basically new ideas, new way of doing things, open mind to pivot. As you know, you often have to pivot. You start with something else and you move on to something else because you learn along the way. The N relates to that, and it's about new ways of thinking. Can you think differently about the same issue? The next A is the ability to understand self, understand yourself. Do you understand your own strengths and shortcomings? Do you know what you're good at and what you're not good at? And therefore, do you get people in your team who actually balance that, right? All of those things, and it's kind of self-explanatory. The T stands for tenacity. Do you have the tenacity? Do you have the resilience? Because there will be tough times. There will be times when you feel like just giving up, just throwing your hands up and walking away. Do you have the tenacity and the resilience to continue? And the last alphabet, E, stands for experience, right? Not necessarily always relevant. We have enough and more startups which are founded by entrepreneurs with no experience, but it always helps. So to me, that's the acronym that I have built when I'm talking to entrepreneurs. This is what I look for: passionate. PASSIONATE. That's, we won't go into the terms are all fairly self-explanatory. We don't need to go into a discussion about each individual one, but that's what I look at.
Very well said. Are there any initiatives that you're working with, Umang, that you would like to share with our podcast listening audience? And what is the easiest way of reaching out or contacting you?
No, the easiest way of reaching out to me is find me either on LinkedIn or email me, umang.moonra@gmail.com. That's perfectly fine. But you know, the other part of the question, the first part of the question that you asked, it's actually quite appropriate that this question follows the previous one. The previous question was, what do I look for in, as an angel investor, what do I look for in entrepreneurs? I'm a director on the board of a Singapore-based fintech called Utrip. It is Asia's first multi-currency prepaid wallet and has taken Singapore and then Thailand by storm. It has also launched a very strong value proposition for SMEs in Singapore and is looking to expand into the other ASEAN countries. So that's one of the things that I'm also working on. But before I joined the board, I had many meetings with the founders who I was extremely impressed by, and precisely because they showed all the qualities in the acronym PASSIONATE. Right? And that's why I said it's very interesting. The question is linked to what you said earlier. But in terms of, yes, what else am I working on? U-Trip is my other passion.
Well, thanks so much, Uman, for sharing us your valuable insights on innovation. And we wish you great success on your future endeavors.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me, Edgar. And like I said, I do hope that listeners find some value in whatever we've discussed. It has been a pleasure to be here.
By Apex Platform and Synfindo. We would like to express our sincere gratitude to Mr. Uman Mundra on sharing us his exceptional thoughts on innovation and its significant importance to our digital economy. We would like to hear from you. Share us your thoughts regarding our topics and send us a message on the Anchor Voice message box. Your message could end up on our future podcast episode. Make sure you never miss any episodes of FinCircle by clicking the subscribe button or follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Breaker, Google Podcasts, Radio Public, Amazon Music, Pocket Casts, Audible, Overcast, TuneIn, Stitcher, Anchor.fm, an affiliated podcast platform. You can also reach us on our website at fincircle.wordpress.com and our Facebook page at FinCircle Podcast. This concludes our podcast episode today. Thank you for listening on FinCircle. This is Ed Angelus. Let's catch up again soon.